Welcome to On Air with the Mountain Lion Foundation, broadcasting research and policy discussions to understand the issues that face the American lion.
This is Julie West with the Mountain Lion Foundation. Today's guest is Officer David Jones. David is a game warden with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife. Born and raised on the East Coast, he graduated from the University of Massachusetts in 1992 and moved to Washington in 1994. In 1995, he started his WDFW career as a hatchery worker for Cedar River Hatchery and additionally worked for other hatcheries until 2002, including Sioux Creek, Heard Creek, and Merwin. In his current role as game warden, Jones serves Washington citizens by overseeing laws relating to fish and wildlife, resolving conflicts between humans and wildlife, and forming partnerships with the public and other agencies to benefit fish and wildlife. In 2007, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife began a pilot program to use Karelian bear dogs to resolve conflicts between humans and wildlife. Officer Jones is paired with the bear dog Indy, and together they address a number of public safety and wildlife issues. He's here with me today. Thank you so much, David, for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me, Julie.
Great. Now, Karelian bear dogs have proved effective for deterring and repelling bears as a non-lethal wildlife control strategy, and the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife are now using them to deter mountain lions as well. So why don't you give us a little history, tell us what led to that decision.
Right. What we've decided to do, and we have some ongoing projects regarding collaring some cats and having some biologists that are working on it, to bring a little more science to it, a little more data, which a lot of folks often want. But for now, the stage we're at is the dogs were primarily envisioned as dogs for working with bears. And we've had a number of issues regarding cat conflicts showing up in the same places bears are showing up. Their activity is a little different, not so much getting in the garbage, but, getting some deer, getting elk, which is what they're supposed to be doing, but oftentimes that brings them a little bit closer to society. So I look at it, and we as a team, all the folks that have dogs, look at it as another tool, how best to deal with these cats. And what we do with these dogs, and it's the same idea that we do with the bears, we do what we call hard releases. And
okay.
There's a couple different ways of doing the hard release. One is the traditional way of removing the animal from the area and bringing it up to an area where we hope that it'll stay. Of course, there are a lot of factors that dictate whether that cat or bear will stay where we put them based on, of course, quality of habitat and is there a dominant animal already in the area. Those are things that we don't always know. There's science here, but there's also a little bit of art and some luck thrown in there as well. So what we do is, choice one is you trap the cat and you bring it out to an area where you're hoping it'll stay within reason, and you release the cat in that area. And of course, when we do that, we do some rubber bullets, beanbag bullets, some cracker shells, and we have the bear dogs there that are agitating the cat. And what we're trying to do is just make the cat's experience with us as unpleasant as possible, and with the hopes that it's going to minimize contact with humans in the future. So you keep the dog attached to you, and the dog is barking at the cat the whole time, and then once you release the cat, you do some pyrotechnics and some beanbag stuff, and they hear the dog barking, and the hope is they don't like it.
Got it. And so the cat will, I guess, just run into the area. Is there any effort to track it or to monitor it to make sure it's not coming back?
Right. So what we have two different things. The bios are we've got about 10 cats. The gentleman's name is Brian Kurtz, and he's kind of the lead on the project. And his job is to find some cats down in King County and put collars on them and literally track through GPS what these cats are doing, where they're going, how often they're going places, how much time they spend, and where they spend it. That's a very science-based approach. What we're doing with our cats, we don't always have time to put GPS collars on them. As a matter of fact, generally we don't have the time. So we put a tag in their ear, so while we cannot track where they're going, if they do in fact show back up, we at least know that, okay, this cat has a tag in its ear, so it's shown up somewhere before. So that helps us to track them a little bit.
Okay. And obviously dogs typically bark at and are prone to chase cats, but why this breed? What is it about this breed that makes them so suited for the job?
Okay, so every dog has a different personality. Folks need to understand that. All these dogs are matched with their handlers. Apparently, mine is full of energy and stubborn, and so I'd have to agree with the breeder that dog is, in fact, exactly like its owner. And that what this dog, okay, I'll give you a general sense. A general sense, these dogs are fearless. They're not generally afraid. They're aggressive in the sense that towards the animals, they're not afraid of them. They're aggressive. They'll bark. They'll chase them. But then when you bring them out into society with the folks or the people, they can dial it back down because our dogs spend an awful lot of time around kids and people. So you need a dog that can dial it up when it's dealing with the animals, and then you need the same dog to dial it back down when it's dealing with the folks. So that's something that we like. The nose on these dogs are incredible. The challenge I have is deciphering what it is he smells. Is it bear scat versus a bear? That's something he and I will probably be working on for years. He has to know what it is I'm looking for, and so that's a bit of a challenge that I have with him. But the energy level, the fearlessness, the loyalness, the desire to want to hunt, which is what they were bred to do out of Finland, was to hunt. And, of course, the challenge here is, as opposed to historically, where the dog was released and could take off for miles and track down the object of the hunter's desire, I need my dog to stay closer to me, because if he goes off too far, that's not very helpful. So hopefully I've articulated what it is that some of the things are that we're looking for in these dogs.
And again, they're not working in packs or with another dog. Just individually, they bring those traits that are needed to deter a large predator.
Yep, historically, they would hunt on their own. And most of the time, with the handlers, they're hunting and searching on their own. There are occasions where they might hook up with some hound dogs and work with the hound dogs a little bit, or we may actually get all our dogs together or maybe two dogs together, but that is probably less than 10%. So you're correct. Generally, the vast majority of the time, they're working on their own.
Okay. Now, in some states, the mountain lion is considered to be a predator that can be shot on the spot, regardless of circumstance or proven threat. So how does the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife manage cougars differently from other states, number one? And number two, what are some of the measures in place when dealing with an unwelcome predator?
Oh, you bet. So the best thing my dog does for these cats is education. And beyond the fairs and the school meetings and the hunter ed classes, beyond those where you can actually touch a group of 20, 30, maybe 50 people at a time, sometimes on TV you can hit hundreds of thousands, but it's at a local level where folks insist that any time an animal in the neighborhood dies, that it's got to be a cat, got to be a cat. Where the vast majority of the time in this neck of the woods, it's coyotes. Coyotes are what do a lot of the grabbing the farmer's animals. So what this dog does is I can bring it to the scene, and I can, based on the evidence I see, no different than a crime scene, and based on the way my dog is acting, it can help indicate whether there was a cat response for that kill or not, and thus I educate. And usually when it's one animal, there's more people coming over, the neighbors coming over, and you can actually educate whole blocks of animals, whole flocks of people just by going out and visiting a kill site. So that's one of the biggest things, if I'm answering that question right, that my dog does as far as I'm concerned.
How interesting. So I was focused more on the deterrence.
Right.
Active deterrence itself, but you're saying there's a little sleuth work involved. They're using their canine skills to actually help determine if the cat was a killer in the first place.
Absolutely. Yep, you're absolutely correct. So when it comes to doing the hard releases, that's helpful. I rarely have animals come back, and again, there's some science and some luck involved there. So that's a good thing. We assume based on the recidivism rate, which is limited, that we're doing something right. Absolutely, there's a whole other area that my dog is touching on, and all these curly and bear dogs touch on. And every county is a little different. Every community is a little different. What folks expect in Eastern Washington versus Western Washington is going to be a little different. Every county is a bit different. More to your, I was trying to kind of answer your question. It may have been in a backwards approach, but in the state of Washington, you have to articulate that there was some sort of fear. Either you were afraid for livestock, animal, yourself, a family member, and then you, based after my investigation, our officer has to investigate it, was that a righteous shooting? So we have hunting seasons for the cats, and we have some permit situations where we give them out. If there's a nuisance cat that's causing an awful lot of trouble, we'll get some hound hunters out and try to remove the cat if we can. Or I can use whatever it is that cat has killed. Generally, it's a deer or a goat or a sheep, and I can use that to try to capture it in a trap. And generally, I remove the cats and without killing them. It's a non-lethal to the best of my ability. Occasionally, we do have to euthanize them, but for the most part, I try to give the cats a benefit of the doubt. It's a bit of a referee balancing act to weigh public safety versus the cat being released. But yeah, I'm coming in the back door on your question, but that, for me, it's the education portion of it, because when one neighbor says there's a cougar that killed my sheep, that spreads like wildfire. And now 8 people know it, and 28 people know it, and 108 people know it, and it's false information. So between
my
investigation...
They all want that cat dead. They all
they
want
do.
That cat dead as a result
they,
of it.
Generally, they do. They want the cat removed. And I guess they don't so much mind if it's dead or not. They just want it gone. And 9 times out of 10, it's not even a cat. Now, on occasion, it is a cat. It's not that it doesn't happen. It is. And I do my best to handle the situation. But generally, vast majority of the time, it's not even a cat. So that public information, trying to get the cougar off of the, public enemy list is a little bit strong. But it's just, it's always the boogeyman, right? It's always, it's the cougar. It's the cougar. And so that's what Indy does, and that's what I try to do is kind of disprove some of these falsehoods that get spread awfully quick in certain communities.
Now, you mentioned your dog's name, Indy, just now. Uh-huh. And tell us about your partner, Indy. You mentioned
right.
He was stubborn.
So, okay, this character here, he's a small dog. He's on the small side. He's mid-50s, full of energy, fast as can be, intelligent, an incredible nose. But if you... don't keep an eye on him. He'll be 2 counties away in a very short period of time. So you have to keep an eye on him. He is high energy. And because of his nose, and he's only 16 months old, so he's going to spend 3 or 4 years. Just he rides with me every day. We do a little bit of training. I wish we could do more training. Most of his training is on the job. There's the animal. Go. Let's go figure it out. Let's handle this. So he doesn't get as many classes I would like to give. The breeder gives him some initial instruction, which is very helpful. And he's just, he's versatile, helps with bears, deer, elk, cats. He helps with all kinds of different things. But the challenge is, especially as a young puppy, is for me to understand what he's reacting to. So if we go to kill site, he's going to react to the smell of coyotes. He's going to react to the scat. And so... number one, he needs to learn that I don't care about those things. And then number two, I need to learn to read what it is he's seeing. So when he sees a cat or a bear or something of imminent threat, the hair raises right on his back like a ridgeback hog. So he gives me a visual, which is helpful. And then I can tell the way he's acting if there's something in the immediate area. But that's something that's going to be honed over years and years and years of him and I hanging out. So he's a great partner to have. He does a lot more than people think as far as, you know, finding poached animals and those types of things that they really don't get credit for. It's a good partner to have. The folks out in the field realize it's kind of a two-man team. It's an officer and a dog, not just an officer. So he's all-around helpful. He is time-consuming, and he takes energy out of me because he's so full of energy. But he's a good partner to have.
I'm so glad. And the Wind River Bear Institute has partnered with the agency. How did that partnership come about? And are they the ones actually training the dogs?
Right. So that's Carrie Hunt, who's over there in Montana. And that relationship initially started about 8 to 10 years ago. We had a biologist named Rocky Spencer who had a tragic accident several years ago with a helicopter. So he's no longer with us, but he was dealing an awful lot with problem wildlife, and he was looking into some options, and there was a biologist that worked for the Forest Service that he bumped into, and she had a Krillian bear dog. And so he just kind of backtracked where that dog came from and wound up talking to the folks at the Bear River Institute. And that's how that relationship started. And he was the first one, a biologist, to have one of these dogs. And when he passed away, that dog went to one of our enforcement officers. And the program has grown a little bit to 6 dogs total since then. So that's a little bit of how that got going.
Okay. And so I guess within your enforcement network, and assuming that non-lethal is the goal, your colleagues will know to call you or call one of your other partners with the dog if there are instances that where the dog is needed.
Yeah, that is absolutely correct. Yep. So we have about 5 of them on the I-5 corridor, and then we have one in Eastern Washington. And sometimes time just doesn't allow for it. You know, the dog's a tool. It's not this perfect, invincible, solve-all choice. It's an option. It's a tool in your toolbox. It's an option. And so all the officers know locally, certainly on the I-5 corridor, and I'm up on the north end of the I-5 corridor, that if they need a hand, maybe you've got a school lockdown and the folks are afraid there's still a bear in the area, you can roll a dog around there, and if a dog doesn't find the bear, you can open the school back up. There's all types of application for the dogs. But yes, the folks, some officers are too busy. They don't have the time to call you. Some stations don't have a massive amount of problem wildlife issues, but the folks that do know what we have, and they often opt to use it.
Okay, and so there are specific circumstances where using dogs makes more sense than other strategies?
Sure. I'll give you a couple examples. For my dog specifically, when I go looking for, let's say I got a problem bear, and sometimes they won't go in my trap. So we do what we call free-range darting, where because he won't go in my trap for one reason or another, I've got to dart the bear, and I know that bear is going to take off. A lot of people think as soon as you dart the animal, it just falls right there in its tracks. That's not true, depending on all kinds of conditions. You could be in for a little bit of a hike. So I can now free-range dart those bears instead of spending the time set up the trap, waiting for them to go in the trap, coming back day after day. I can free-range dart them. That bear is going to take off, tip over, take a little nap out in the woods. Now I can release my dog, and he's going to find that bear. Then when he gets to the bear, he barks, so I know exactly where he and the bear are at. And here in Western Washington, with the terrain the way it is, you can't really spot and see from a distance. You're giving some thick cover. So to me, that's my first-hand example of when my dog was very helpful.
Okay, and yeah, playground situations where there are children or people. Is it common for mountain lions to show up in urban environments throughout Washington State?
Sure. So you've got, of course, different definitions of what urban is. You know, you and I might have a different opinion of urban. Certainly Seattle would be considered urban. And a year or two ago, we had a cat show up down, almost in straight up downtown Seattle. And we used the dogs to find that cat and remove it and put it back out a little bit further in the woods, not so close to Seattle. Is it common? I mean, to answer your question directly, it's certainly not common. The cats kind of work the fringes. And the only time they get in trouble is when sometimes the populations of deer start to increase, particularly in areas where there's not hunting allowed based on population. And so, therefore, those cats, especially young cats, are often kind of sucked into coming in some areas where they may have some conflicts with people. But it's not common. And even though most of the time they roll through there, we've done studies in the past where we call the cats, and you can see the cats' movements. They spend a lot more time than you would think in areas where they'd be likely to have some human contact. But based on their skills and abilities, they generally are not even seen. So they're not common, but it does happen.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're a believer in there being win-win solutions then in negotiating public safety with the needs of wildlife.
I do. Sometimes I think I should wear like a black and white striped uniform because I'm a referee. I'm basically kind of the balancer between, you know, society, human beings, and the animals. And so I have to balance that. And the more tools and knowledge and assistance and science that I have on my side, the better. I don't always make the right choice. I don't always make the right decisions. but I do the best I can. And having the dog there, at least on four or five different types of applications, is very helpful because the society, community, they enjoy it, they appreciate it. I can use his nose and his actions to help me form an opinion beyond what it is this cat has done, how often is this cat here, where was the cat, what did the cat do. And beyond that, the dog brings a little more, let's say, some tools and some options regarding how I deal with the animal. So I believe in the dogs, and I believe in trying to do this little balancing act, and I've been fortunate enough thus far to be lucky and not have, at least to my knowledge, I haven't had any problems with my animals that I've released, so I'm happy with that as well.
Well, now, are you all encouraging other agencies to adopt bears, or can you all be champions for this kind of?
Right. So what we do is, I don't know that we proactively go out and try to encourage people to do it. We take any opportunity we can to talk about it and discuss the pros and the cons and the good stuff and the bad stuff regarding having these dogs. We've had various agencies contact us and talk to us about it, and we just try to shoot them straight on what our experiences have been, mostly positive, and we explain it to them. And again, we just say, hey, consider it. That's all. We're not trying to go make money off of it. There's nothing in it for us to gain. But if you're in a state like Washington where you have wildlife regularly meeting that zone where a lot of people are hanging out, it's a option that needs to be considered is how I would put
that's
that.
Right. So is Washington State currently the only state using the dogs?
That's a great question, and I'm going to take a pass on it because I don't want to give you bad information. I know up in Canada, particularly Ontario, those folks up there have a lot of bear activity through Banff and Jasper and those places. They use curly and bear dogs, but I don't want to give you incorrect
That's
information,
okay.
so I'm not going to answer that specifically because I don't know the answer.
Sure. And so I don't want to end on a negative, but you did mention there's a downside to having the dogs. Are they ever aggressive with the animals or try to hurt the animals, or what would some of those downs?
No, the downside is veterinarian bills, and somebody has to pay for that. So this isn't, they're not free. You got to feed them. They take energy. It's not like a truck that you can just park. It's a responsibility. It's a big time responsibility. No problems with kids. They've been fantastic. Occasionally they might nip at another dog just to kind of cover his own territory, but they're great with the public, great with the kids, and that's one of the reasons why we use them. But folks need to understand they cost money. They take time. They take energy. They take training. And my dog is, in particular, is stubborn. So we got to work through that just a little bit, and we use whistles and food to try to convince them that my way is the right way, if I can. But that's the kind of negatives I'm talking about. They take energy and they cost money, and people need to realize that.
I see. And tell us about some of your agency's outreach programs that educate the public about the dogs and
right.
the challenges that face cougars.
The best, we got some Facebook activity. We got a web page. Those things are on there. The Hunter Ed classes, the local classes that we give. We often go to different schools and do presentations there, particularly down in King County, where you have a lot of activity where the houses are being built right up into the hillside. So the officers down there have a lot of work with the local people. But I will tell you that the best thing we do is talk about on interviews like this and let folks know that this is an option that's out there and they get to talking about it. And then for me, the local work that I do, just dealing with one neighborhood at a time, seeing my dog, asking me questions about the dog, watching my dog at work, seeing some stuff that he does in the newspaper, that's for me, that's the best outreach dog-specific that we do.
Walk me through how the dogs interact with the cats. Like if there's
okay.
a problem cat, what happens?
Right.
What happens?
So keep in mind now, we've got I deal with, let's say I wrestle 6 bears and 3 cats a year. So I'm not, I don't have hundreds and hundreds of animals I'm rolling through. So let's say, okay, I'll give you last year's example, which is the most recent one in my mind. So September, I get a 2 cats. Yeah, I set up a trail cam on a trap. And so oftentimes, It's not the cat's fault. People want to blame the cats. Oftentimes, there are things that the folks are doing. You know, bears, they're leaving trash out. And with cats, they do things like this last situation I dealt with in September, where the homeowners didn't really want the goat up by the house making noise and digging up the dirt and what have you. So they put it kind of out in the back 40, down in a little creek bottom, and they tied it to a tree. Now, that's, you know, in cougar country, that's probably not the wisest thing to do. And the cat, as it turned out, was accompanied by a sub-adult, and so she was kind of showing the juvenile the ropes. Mm-hmm. And they found the cat, or the goat, just sitting right there. And so they killed the goat, and it was my job to catch the cat. At the time, I didn't know there were two cats, but I had a funny feeling there might have been, so we put up a trail cam so I could see that once we caught the one cat, there was actually a second cat outside the trap. So we ended up catching them both. So now, and one at a time, caught one day and one the next day. So my dog's job is to address the cat at the scene. So I bring my dog down, and I'm doing two things. Number one, I'm introducing my dog to these cats, and I'm letting him know this is something I'm interested in. And he's going to know that smell. He's going to know that smell. So I want to introduce him to the cats, smell that smell. And he gets, you know, he'll bark at the cat, and he'll kind of nip at the corners of the cage. He's just barking at the cat. He's not being completely aggressive, but the cat clearly is not comfortable with the situation. So then I dart the cats. I load my dog. I load the cat. And then we bring the cat out in the woods. We give him a reversal. And then on the drugs, and that cat starts coming too. And so there comes a point where we're going to release that cat. And, of course, this is just hard release activity. So when we deem the cat's ready to go, it's got its tag in its ear, and it looks good to go. We've checked it to make sure there's no visible injuries. Of course, we checked it prior to it coming to, naturally. And we open up the gate to the trap. And off that cat goes, and my dog has been barking at the cat the whole time. And then once you release the cat, the dog is, if you would have let the dog go, he would chase that cat. But at my dog's age right now, I'm not in a big hurry to let my dog go on his own with a cat right now. So I would keep the dog attached to a harness and a leash. And he's just nipping at that cat, and that cat takes off. And that cat's desire, from what I've seen, to return is very limited.
So it's really at the release stage when the dogs are involved, not so much the capture.
Okay, so that's the first half of it, and then we can evolve over to that. We can roll over to the other section, and this of course has two prongs. When you've got an animal that's dead in a pasture, we'll go there and decide what it is based on the evidence and based on how he reacts. Do we have a cat? Do we have a coyote? In the instance of a cat, then it's going to be my dog's job to find the cat and treat the cat. In the 16 months of his existence with me, he has not had to find and treat a cat. Now, he does do some work with Brian Kurtzen, the biologist I mentioned earlier, who is in the business of finding these cats and calling them. And so my dog will do some work with those hounds and those dogs, but in all honesty, it's the houndsman's dog that at this stage is doing all the work. As my dog gets more experience and a little more age to him and understanding and maturity, then he can do some more of that activity. But for now, because he's so young, I'm not comfortable with letting my dog go loose on these cats just yet.
Did you care to share a personal story of an encounter with a cougar in the wild, either with or without Indy?
Oh, yeah, I've had several of them, and I would say I get a little bit complacent with the cats. I love the cats. I respect the cats, and I maybe should be a little more respectful and fearful of them than I am. I'm just so used to dealing with them. I enjoy seeing them. My favorite story dealing with cats, a cougar in particular, is when I first moved to the state, I saw one cross the road up ahead of me, and I didn't quite realize, A, how close it was and how big it was. And so I pulled over to the side of the road, and I had a different dog with me. It was one of my hunting dogs. And I was just trying to see if my dog could find that cat. Now, I'm coming from Boston. We don't really see cats around. I had never seen one in my life, so I just wasn't really too familiar with them, but I was curious. So my assumption was that cat had run up the hillside, and I assumed wrong. That cat was right in the bushes probably 15 feet away from me. And when my dog came up to it, he froze like a statue. And I think I was kind of concerned I might have bit off more than I can chew. But fortunately, as is typical, that cat was more afraid of me than I was of him, although that was probably a 50-50 push. And after hissing and howling and making a bunch of noise, it went straight up the hillside. And that was basically my first interaction with a cougar, which is kind of a highlight of my outdoor activity, and I enjoyed it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, David, for taking the time to speak with us today.
Yes, thank you, Julie. I appreciate the opportunity to try to explain to as many folks as I can what it is that I do as a game warden and what kind of help my dog provides for me.
Well, the Karelian Bear dogs are a unique animal for sure, and I'm so glad to know there are alternatives like this, non-lethal alternatives that agencies such as yours are utilizing. Well, fantastic work, David. Thank you so much for sharing what you know about the Karelian Bear dogs. You've been listening to a Mountain Lion Foundation on-air broadcast program. Thank you for joining us.
This has been a Mountain Lion Foundation on-air broadcast. On Air is a copyrighted production of the Mountain Lion Foundation. Permission to rebroadcast is granted for non-commercial use. For more information, visit mountainlion.org.